This episode is part one in a two-part series. It discusses crime scenes, homicide, and violence. Listener discretion is advised. This is The Fall Line. In Austin, Texas, there's a two-story mall, one of a dozen or more like it in a city that size. You're likely familiar with the type, a brick and concrete structure made up of arches and breezeways, with low-ceiling shops stacked on top of each other, the tenants a mix of national franchises and small business locals. Every city has those malls. Maybe your dentist was there, or your nail salon, or your after-school reading program, or local realtor, or your favorite takeout restaurant, or the best place to find back-to-school shoes. In Austin, one such shopping center, the Galleria Oaks, sits on North Highway 183, near Research Boulevard and just south of Anderson Mill Road. Back in 2014, there was a tenant on the second floor. Grace Language and Cultural Institute offered Chinese language classes in both reading and writing for children and adults, as well as tutoring. The business also had a fine arts branch with painting and calligraphy instruction for all ages. Its owner, 47-year-old Xiaojia Grace Chen, was the language instructor. Grace worked alongside her husband, Robert Loy, who had charge of the painting and calligraphy courses. Grace also had a young adult son, Jackie, who in 2014 was away at college in California, where he was majoring in art. Grace missed him, terribly, but she was proud of what he was accomplishing, and she'd just been to visit him at school, which had been good for them both. Jackie would later tell the Austin American Statesman that Grace had spent the entire California trip planning new classes for the Grace Language and Cultural Institute. He told reporters, "She was that kind of person, that when she rests, she's still working." Grace's business was still fairly new. The school had only been open for about a year. But Grace Chen had already been teaching in the Austin area, and for some time. According to the Austin American Statesman, Grace spent some time instructing at, quote, other Chinese schools across Central Texas, before opening her own. This was in addition to her extensive professional experience back in China, where she'd worked as a college instructor, translator, and a teacher. Her best friend in Austin, Dan Dan Zhou, would later describe education as Grace's passion. Quote, "Grace studied Japanese language and majored in education during college, but she really loved to teach. One day during her class here at Grace Language and Culture School, one of her young students accidentally called her mom. Although surprised and both cracked up and laughed, that's exactly how she treated her students, with the motherly love you just don't see everywhere. That's the graceful teacher we know." That energy of Grace's, it extended into life outside work, too. When she moved to Austin from New York State in 2009 with her second husband, Jackie's stepfather, and her son, she soon became involved in the Austin community in a number of ways. Per the Statesman, Grace was a board member of both the Greater Austin Chinese Chamber of Commerce and the Austin Chinese Professional Society. Amy Wong Mok, director of the Austin Asian American Cultural Center and the president of the Asian American Community Partnership, remembers meeting Grace, who left a very positive impression.
"I remember I just met her once when she first moved down to Austin from New York. And she was about to set up her studio to introduce Chinese painting, language, and culture, you know, to children. And she came and visited me and asked for my, advice about how to go about doing it. So I basically told her that you know, it is a commitment, and I'm just so glad that he was willing to do it, because somebody has to, and obviously this is not like a very lucrative business to do, you know, training on culture and language, especially from the beginning. So I just, you know, let her know that it is a commitment, and it's a commitment beyond just looking at the bottom line, you know. And this is a commitment, you know, to our Chinese culture. And that was the only time I think I talked to her. But then we have some mutual friends that I heard that after she had set up her studio, she was very generous to share her space with some Chinese organization, which they would meet at her studio. So she provided that Chinese organization to have meeting at her place. That's how I heard about her generosity and really, you know, how helpful she was. So I was impressed.
Grace didn't shy away from making commitments. Her best friend, Dan Dan Zhou, would later tell reporters that Grace was also woven into the fabric of the community as well. Per the Statesman, she took part in, quote, Chinese folk dances and modeled traditional garb in recent Lunar New Year celebrations. Dan Dan explained, quote, it kept her closely connected with her Chinese community and her Chinese culture. So Grace had her friends in Austin, was a respected educator, had a community, a son doing well in college, was, as her friend Dan Dan would later say, graceful in everything she did. But she had problems too. She was worried about her school. Worries she discussed with her son Jackie on her trip to California. And there were worries about her home life that she'd brought up as well. He'd offered to come home to take a semester off, but she didn't want her son to miss out on his education. So, for the time being, Grace had returned to Austin, to her school and her students. And on February 19th, 2014, Grace Chin opened her school for business, just like always. That much we know. Per the local Fox affiliate, she would have done so at about 9:30 a.m. According to local news footage of the Galleria Oaks, GLC's lessons took place in a large open space. Like many tutoring centers and strip-style malls, the business was mostly glass-fronted window panels and a flat rectangular floor plan. It's the kind of space that didn't have its own restroom, which meant that Grace Chin shared a locked private facility with other tenants of the building. She and her staff had access to a second-floor bathroom via an exterior door farther down the second-floor breezeway. Customers were not given access to the restroom. Likely, they weren't even aware of its presence. It wasn't marked. To anyone passing by, the door would have blended into the brick wall, appearing to be a maintenance entrance or perhaps a locked stairwell. After around 9:30 a.m. on February 19th, we don't know much about Grace Chin's precise movements. It was likely a normal business day. None of the other tenants who spoke with reporters had noted anything unusual. It was bright that day, warming to near 70, average for Texas in late February, and plenty of people were out and about by mid-afternoon at the Galleria Oaks. No one shopping at the mall noticed Grace leaving her business, or if they did, they didn't and haven't come forward to tell police. It's likely that Grace didn't plan to be gone for long. It was probably around 1:30 in the afternoon when she stepped out. At least, that's what the medical examiner would later estimate. According to the Austin American-Statesman, another of the building's tenants discovered Grace's body at about 3:35 p.m. The police would not publicly name the person who had found Grace for some time. As far as we can find, not for years. But according to a 2018 report from Fox 7 Austin, a retired detective stated that it was Grace's husband. Per a report later released by the medical examiner, Grace had been dead for about 2 hours. At first, authorities would only say that she'd been found in an area inaccessible to the general public. That, and that Grace had been murdered. Her death was quickly ruled a homicide, and, per KVU News, police declined to release a cause of death, stating only that, quote, there had been trauma to the body. Eventually, again, much later in the case, the Austin Police Department would later amend that to, quote, asphyxiation, but, per Fox 7, quote, would not confirm strangulation. In those early days of the investigation, there was very little shared. The police were still making sense of the crime and Grace's death themselves. Reporters swept into the Galleria Oaks to record the crime scene technicians and detectives as they worked. That footage still exists online, including shots of the darkened windows of Grace's business. The media were unable to speak with Grace's husband or their employee, and Grace's only child, Jackie, had booked the first flight back to Austin. He would speak to the media, eventually. And so would Amy Wong Mok, an acquaintance of Grace's, and the director of the Austin Asian American Cultural Center and president of the Asian American Community Partnership. She would take on many interviews through the years, first speaking on behalf of Austin's Asian American community, and then, eventually, on behalf of Grace herself. Someone needed to keep her case in the public eye. Amy would ask the questions again and again. Wasn't there someone out there who'd seen something? It had happened in broad daylight, in a public place. In the first few days after Grace's death, the other tenants at the Galleria Oaks were mulling over the same thoughts. Journalists interviewed them on camera. There weren't many other people to speak to, and they were shocked and felt terribly for Grace and for her family. Everyone who'd met her, they liked her. That would become a common theme in coverage of Grace's case. She was, and is, so well-liked and well-loved. An embroidery business owner, Michael Tipton, spoke with television station KI on Friday the 21st, just 2 days after Grace's murder. In reference to Grace and her husband, he said, quote, I thought they were both very nice people. He indicated he was worried about the killer, especially someone so bold as to murder in the afternoon in a busy shopping center. Quote, he said he wouldn't feel safe until an arrest was made. He told reporters, quote, I think they owe it to her to find that person. It seemed police were focused on that goal. Per multiple outlets, there was near constant activity at the crime scene. But according to KITV, on Friday the 21st, police told reporters that the case was still developing and that, quote, there are no suspects. The homicide could be random. And that was frightening in its own way to the tenants. But there were other fears, too. Per KXAN, there had already been a horrific crime that winter, one that was on the minds of Amy and others who wanted to speak with authorities. Quote, a Chinese family of four was found dead inside their Cypress home earlier in the month. According to the Houston Chronicle, that family, the Sons, a mother, a father, and two children, lived in a Houston suburb about 2 hours from Austin. They'd been found shot, execution style, on the evening of January 30th. At the time of Grace's death, there were no leads in the son's case. Per KXAN, no public connection had been stated, but as Amy Wong Mok told KXAN, quote, there's a lot of collective fear, a lot of collective trauma, because if it could happen to her, it could happen to us. The Austin Chief of Police would arrange a town hall meeting in cooperation with the Asian American Culture Center, just after a vigil was held for Grace Chin. Her son, Jackie, can be seen on the news footage, in a black jacket and glasses, holding a rose like the other mourners, looking exactly like a college student too young to have lost his mother. She'd raised him on her own for years. He would be doing many adult tasks that February, ones his mother would have never wished on him. Calling his relatives in China, planning a funeral, choosing a casket. There's a lot to Grace Chin's story. The investigation into her murder is a piece of that, and her case is still open today, moved to the cold case unit despite some promising leads. Though his mother was married, it's Jackie who's remained the main family contact for the media and the person to participate in anniversary stories about her open case. And those news spots are important, but they don't capture everything. How Grace came to Austin, and who she was, and what she wanted, for herself, and for Jackie, and for the future, are integral to understanding her, and possibly to solving her case. So we'll start with the person who knew her best, Jackie, now 29, and designing art for mobile games. He never moved back to Austin. After all, Jackie's home had been with his mother, where she was. Jackie told us Grace's story over several hours this fall. Over these two episodes, he, with the help of Amy Wong Mok, who has become Grace's advocate in Austin, will help you get to know her too.
She grew up in southern China, and she has an older sister, which is my aunt, and that would be her only sibling. And she grew up with my grandparents and my aunt in Chaozhou. When she was small, back then in China, there's a period where people need to go to like outer state and help the farmers. And so my mom's family, my grandparents and my mom and my aunt, they all moved to Hainan Island. That's also in South China. I think they stayed there for a few years. I think my mom was in elementary school. She was very small back then. I think when they were in the Hainan Island, everyone who would stand there were farming. It's not like, how should I explain it? It's not like their job was farmer. But in that period in China, especially for the people who were in the university, people will have to be sent out to our state and help with the farming. And so it doesn't matter what was your title or what you did. You have to go stay for like a few years and then you return and then you continue your studying or your job.
Grace grew up during an era that included, per the Rosenberg Quarterly, the Up to the Mountains and Down to the Countryside, or UMDC, movement. According to Georgia State professor Dr. Baotong Gu, the UMDC, quote, first started in 1956 when the Political Bureau of the Communist Party of China issued a document entitled National Agricultural Development Program, 1956 to 1967, Amendment Draft, which first proposed that educated urban youth should go and work in the countryside. Per Infobloom, the purpose of this was that, quote, officials decided to re-educate young urban people being brought up in privileged families by sending them into small towns in the mountains and farming villages. According to Dr. Gu, at UMDC's peak, somewhere close to, quote, 16 million urban youths were working in the countryside. The campaign ended around the late 1970s when the Great Cultural Revolution ended. We don't know much about Grace's family going together versus younger single people traveling to work in agriculture. Jackie tries to avoid upsetting his grandparents, who are very advanced in age, by asking them too much about his mother. But we know Grace and her sister experienced the UMDC movement alongside their parents as young children.
I think one of the stories that my grandparents told me about my mom when they were at the Hainan Island. So since my mom was pretty young, right, and I think she was like 4 or 5, and you know how people, when they do the farming, there's a lot of tools and a lot of things that you have to learn how to use. I think what my grandparents told me is like, even though my mom was very small, like she was tiny, and she would go to the countryside and go to the farm and help out wherever she can. And she didn't feel afraid about all the different tools and all the dangers that, you know, when you work at the farm back then. According to my grandparents, she was totally fine. She was okay and she was brave.
We don't know a lot about Grace's teenage years, but she did talk to Jackie about her college experiences and the website for GLC is still available via archive.org. There, Grace's biography is preserved. It states that she attended South China Normal University in the 1980s, where she majored in Japanese, specifically focused on interpreting and on education. Here's what Jackie told us.
So how things work back then is most people will be assigned to a major, and then you will go to university and study in that major. And my mom got assigned with the Japanese as a major.
Would you say she was particularly gifted at various languages?
I think she was pretty gifted studying the languages. I think her career and also her study in college, I think it's pretty smooth, I would say. She didn't really have like much of a huge challenge, I think. Once she finished her study in Japanese in college, and she was able to find a job to be a translator in one of the Japanese companies that located in Guangdong. She was there for a few years as a translator to the CEO or the president of the company.
Grace also met Jackie's father, her first husband, while she was studying for her undergraduate degree. She told Jackie bits and pieces of the story as he was growing up.
They were like schoolmates in the university. I think the only thing I know is like my dad asked her out to dance in the disco. They decided to become a couple because they divorced when I was 4 or 5. They didn't really talk about it, or they didn't really get like a chance to tell me like, oh, hey, this is how I met your mom, or this is how I met your dad. And I was too young to ask. I didn't know. I wouldn't have a chance to ask her back then. My dad was, I think he was an entrepreneur, and I think his major was education. And I would also say he is a person with vision. He was, when they were first in school and when he was first graduated, the computer was not popular in China back then. He did have a vision to see like the need for people in the future. Computer would be essential for everyday life. I think he got a bunch of computers and set up like a computer class to teach people how to use desktop computer. But that didn't work out because the people in the city back then, they didn't feel like it's necessary to learn that kind of thing. So I would say he got like maybe 2 years early. So maybe, yeah. So if he waited 2 more years or maybe waited a year and then he created that class, maybe he will be more successful than he is right now. But sometimes I wish I asked her more about her story and how things were going for her, because right now I can understand more being an adult and having all the experience that I had in the past 2 years. I think if I have a chance to talk to her right now, I will have like a deeper conversation and I will understand more about her life and how she, what kind of person she really is. But yeah, but back then I was just too busy fooling around. Like, I guess that's what happened to most people. Like, when they were young, they don't really understand how important to know your parents. What I'm saying is to actually know what she's been through and to know more about her experience. And also, as a parent, like, when your child or your children are too young, they tend to not tell you that much. Even though if you ask them, hey, what happened when you first met my dad? I think she would just simply answer, hey, we were in the school together and blah, blah, blah. She wouldn't tell me that much because I'm still a child, a teenager maybe to her. If I ask questions about my mom to my grandparents, one of the things is sometimes I don't want to bring up mom to my grandparents. It's not like I don't want to ask or I don't want to know more about her. It's like my grandma, she gets really emotional when I bring up mom, you know. You know what I mean? I just don't want her to feel the sorrow again. And then I don't know what to do. on one side, I would know more and about my mom, and I would like to hear them talk about her more. And on the other side, every time I talk about my mom, my grandma cries. I don't want to see her crying, especially at this time. I can't. It's very hard for us to go back to China because COVID. And when I talk to her on the video chat, I would try to tell her good news, like how we are doing and we're safe in the U.S. You know, I just don't want to see her cry on the video chat.
Though Jackie maintained a relationship with his father, Grace was his primary parent. And he spent the vast majority of his time living with her in Guangzhou, a city about 75 miles northwest of Hong Kong. When Jackie was in middle school, Grace approached him to discuss a major decision, moving to the United States. She'd met Jackie's future stepfather, Robert, who'd been visiting China sometime earlier, and they were discussing marriage.
When did your mom first tell you that that was what she wanted to do? How old were you?
I was like 13 or 14 because I was in 7th or 8th grade.
And did she ask you, should we do this? Do you want to go? Or
from what I remember, it's been so long, but from what I remember, she did ask me about how I feel about a possible plan for our future. I think she was like, hey, how would you feel if we move to the U.S. and then stay there? The way my mom, how she communicated with me throughout my childhood, I feel like she really cares about my feelings. She did mention sometimes when I was little and I caused some trouble, she would never hit me. That's the first thing. And then she would call me to her room and then there's like a moment of silence, right? I always wonder why she doesn't talk to me or like why all the silence. And then she, when I was in high school, we talked about it one day and then she told me she was thinking the best way to communicate with me, how she, in what way she can tell me about what you did is wrong. It's just basically the moment of silence, her thinking the best way to communicate with me. So she won't hurt my feeling or have any trauma for me from our conversation. She also got like a bunch of books about child education. So she can find like the best way to talk to me. And since she's always been caring about my feelings, so she definitely asked me how I feel about moving to the U.S. You know, I didn't know what it means, you know. Even though she asked me, oh, hey, how would you feel? I think the only thing I can think of is maybe I won't be able to see my classmates again. You know, I won't be like in the same school with my friends. Yeah, she did ask me, and then I think it's okay. I said it should be okay as long as I'm with her. I think that's why I said we went to New York first. That's where my stepdad stayed back then.
Did you know him before you went over?
Yeah, I met him a few times before we moved over.
How did your mom meet him?
From relatives, I think.
We only have Jackie's memories for this part of the story. His stepfather didn't respond to an interview request that we sent by mail. So, take this as Jackie's version of events, filtered through a decade or more of memory. But this is what he recalls from his early days in New York. According to Jackie, things were very different than what his mother had been expecting, almost right from the start. In 2007, he and Grace moved to North Babylon, in Long Island, to join his soon-to-be stepfather.
My mom didn't really expect what's here in the U.S. before she made the decision to bring me and herself and move to New York. The reason why I'm saying it is when we first came to the U.S., we were staying in New York, right? And we rented like a floor in a single family house. I think it's like a duplex or something. Anyway, but it was a rented residence. We were not in my stepdad's house when we first came to the U.S. So basically, we stayed there for some time. I think my mom would wonder like, hey, why aren't we at your house or wherever? The actual situation is my stepdad, he had an ex-wife, right? I think what he told my mom is he already had the divorce or everything settled down. All the messy stuff taken care of. But it turns out that they are still in the negotiation part. When we first moved to New York, the reason why we have to stay at the rented property is his ex-wife was still staying at the house that they were living at. So we weren't able to return to the house. They were still in negotiation. What happened was we stayed at the rented property for maybe like a month, less than a month maybe, because I only been to that school for like maybe 2 weeks, and then we had to move. And it turns out that my stepdad just ran out of cash, I assume, because we learned that the landlord kind of sued him for owning the rent.
We did check this via public records and verify Jackie's memory of the rent issue via Suffolk County's online court record system. With the forced move, there was no choice but to move somewhere else. And this meant that Grace and Jackie would be living in his stepfather's family home, with his family still living there.
We're staying under the same roof with his ex-wife.
Oh, gosh.
That was like a nightmare for my mom and I. And especially for my mom, like, I don't think she would make the decision to come to U.S. if she knows what things are like here. As I said before, my mom has been already caring about my feeling and how I was treated since being a single mom, you know. And that's pretty much the most important thing that she would care about, I would say. She wouldn't take me here if she knew. Because when we were staying at the house, the lady, my stepdad's ex-wife, I'll just call her the lady. The lady over there will sometimes come knock on our doors for God knows why. This one morning, it was like 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. She was knocking on my door and saying there's like a drawer in my room that belongs to her.
What?
You know, I like when I think about that, it's probably she just wanted to annoy my stepdad, you know. Thinking from her point of view, right? If I'm in her point of view, I would be pretty pissed too. Right? My ex-husband just brought his new wife and a son to our house, right? And staying under our roof, I would be pissed too if I think of it right now. I got pretty scared back then, but when I think of it right now, I kind of understand where she's coming from. But also, like, but because what she did, her action affected me directly. And my mom got like really emotional and she was under so much pressure every day. And I would say that's not a fun time to think of living there. And I think I stayed there for maybe 1 year and a half, I think.
Jackie and Grace would eventually get relief from that situation in their move with Jackie's stepfather to Austin in 2009. It was Jackie's sophomore year of high school, and the family made the trip cross-country by car.
Yeah, that's a long drive. And also, my stepdad, he worked at like an art gallery company before. So back then, he had like a bunch of artworks, prints that he needed to move from New York to Austin. And so we have to move like a truck with all his stuff. And we drove from, my mom had a license then. So she was able to drive out of the car. And then my stepdad drove the other one. We were able to drive that down to Austin. But during the road trip, they had like argument. It came to the point that I remember we were at a gas station and they were having argument. And then it just got so intense that they had to call the police. So the police had to come to the gas station and negotiate and have them calm down. And I think I didn't ask why. And then I assume it's because of all the messy stuff. Just being so exhausted, you know, that's my mom. So, you know, it's very understandable that she has need to let out. And my stepdad is not the best person you want to communicate with.
Just a note, we don't have any way to verify the call to police that Jackie mentions, as he doesn't remember the precise details of the location and time. But he recalls it as a very intense trip. At the beginning of the episode, you heard how well-loved Grace was in Austin, and that's certainly true. By 2014, she was a strong presence in the Chinese-American cultural and arts communities. But Jackie says that it didn't start that way. Grace took her time. Maybe she needed it to adjust.
She didn't blend in to the community immediately. I think she was I'm guessing she would like to have like her time with herself. I don't know what to think back then, but I know she didn't go to the community or do whatever that she did later immediately once we moved to Austin. But later, she found that she was ready to work, I would say. Maybe she was, maybe the first couple of years, she was just preparing, you know, as a new immigrant. The time that she spent in New York was not very helpful. You know, she didn't have like a very good environment to get used to the new environment. And then later, I think she also found it necessary for her to work because I wouldn't say our financial status is the best. As far as I know, we got the money from my stepdad selling his artwork online or wherever. But clearly it wasn't enough. Or maybe it wasn't enough. I'm not sure. They never mentioned to me how their financial situation was. But later, my mom decided the family needs her to work, or maybe she was ready. Once she was ready, she found out it's better to stick on what you know. Like for her, it's teaching, right? She's been teaching for years. So that's when she reached out to school, I think, and then she was there for quite some time, and then later she found herself to be ready to have her own business. I think it was also her idea to have my stepdad to teach the art class so they can work together. I would say it's pretty brave as a woman and pretty independent, like in my opinion now, for her to have that plan out. And then also for her to have the courage to have her own school, to have this art and Chinese and the whole Chinese cultural experience, for her to have that idea and her courage to make it happen. I would say she was pretty brave and full of ideas. She had never done that before. She had taught Chinese before, but it's different between teaching a class and owning your own business, right?
It reminds me of the story that your grandparents told about her not being afraid of like the farming equipment and just jumping up and just doing what needed to be done.
Yeah. I think she has the courage and the confidence. I think before 2014, before that, I think she's okay in my memory. At least I didn't feel like she was having too much trouble. Regarding the school or relationship with my stepdad and her. She didn't really talk about that back then, before 2014. But in 2014, January, I think it's late 2013, she did mention me that maybe she kind of pressure running the school, and also she feel like she will need more help with the school. I remember I suggest that I can take like a semester off from my college and back to Austin and help her with the schooling. And that was like the second year of my college. So I proposed that maybe I can go back to Austin, and then I can also teach at art club. That will help her out. And maybe we can get more students that way. We have a few discussions about that. I think she was pretty uncertain having me back to Austin to help her out when I proposed the idea. Maybe she needed the help, but she also didn't feel like if I have to postpone my study and then return to her side and then help her out. So it's like a mixed feeling for her.
Ultimately, Jackie convinced his mother to let him take a semester off and let him come and help her with the school. So that was one problem solved. But on that last trip, she did have something else she wanted to discuss.
We had that talk. We kind of had that decided. And she asked me, how would I feel if she wanted to divorce my stepdad? I think that was the exact question that she asked me. Like, how would I feel? And then my answer was, as long as it's what's best for her, if she decides the thing doesn't work out between the two of them, I will feel totally fine. You don't worry about me. Make your decision, and then if this is what you want, then go for it. Don't worry about what I think, because I'll be okay, because I'm not a kid anymore.
Next time on The Fall Line, we continue our coverage of the unsolved murder of Grace Chen, the call Jackie received, the growing concern in Austin's Asian American community, and the stolen art charges that would unexpectedly touch the edges of Grace's case. If you have any information regarding the unsolved murder of Xiaojia Grace Chen, please contact the Austin Police Department's Cold Case Unit at 512-974-5250. Capital Area Crime Stoppers offers rewards of up to $1,000. Their number is 512-472-8477. If you know of a case that should be covered on The Fall Line, there's a link to our case submission form in the show notes. Thank you for listening. The Fall Line is a fully independent show, and we appreciate listener support. It allows us to do research, obtain FOIA, pay our content advisors, and support and donate to the causes we care about. If you try out the products we advertise, please use our sponsor codes. It really helps. And if you'd like to support the show and the stories we cover, join us on Patreon. We're raising Patreon funds to continue to fund the Millbrook Twins billboard and to raise a therapy fund for families who've been on the show. Each and every one of our patrons helps us continue this work, and we're so grateful for your help. On Patreon, you can get early release ad-free versions of our regular episodes, plus blogs and videos for only $5 a month. We've also added video live streams, which all patrons can enjoy, starting at just $1. The Fall Line is written, hosted, and researched by Lauren Norton, with additional research by Brian Waters, Kim Fritz, and Kiana Burgess. Interviews by Brooke Hargrove. Produced, engineered, and scored by Maura Curry. Content advisement by Brandy C. Williams, Liv Fallon, and Vic Kennedy. And, as always, our most special thanks to Angie Dodd. We'd also like to take a moment to thank Beth Atchison, who's provided social media support and community building since the very beginning, because she cares about the cases we cover and the families who are featured on the show. Thank you, Beth. You have been and continue to be amazing. Currently, our monthly donation is going to Private Investigations for the Missing. Please join us in supporting this nonprofit. They need funds to help families access the services of PIs.